I cannot solve your problem, sir. Only you can.
We, as Americans, have the capacity now, as we've had in the past, to do whatever needs to be done to preserve this last and greatest bastion of freedom.
Discussing the issues that actually matter. Finding the answers using logic and reason. KLZ 560 presents Rush to Reason. Now here is your host, John Rush.
All right, welcome. Hour number three is upon us. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush. I do appreciate it very much. Thank you all for listening. Our guest right now from The New American, Veronica Krylenko. And Veronica, I know you've talked to my cohort, Andy, several times. I was not around when you were a guest with us. So thank you for being with us this time. And it's very nice to meet you finally.
Well, yes, thank you, John. Thank you for having me on. It's an honor.
Oh, I appreciate it very much. Again, you're from The New American, and you're talking about today, California schools, are we going to require masks regardless of really vaccination status, which, by the way, I don't think kids ought to be vaccinated anyway. That's a whole other topic probably for another day. But talk about what's going on in California.
Yes, you're right. On July 9th, the local officials, the health department of California announced that students and teachers in California will still need to wear masks while indoors at school, despite the mounting evidence that masks hurt children's health and they don't prevent actually the spread of the virus. These announcements also follow the update from the CDC that says that masks are not necessary for vaccinated students and school staff. The CDC's updated guidelines emphasize in-person learning as a priority this fall, and but California decided to do its own thing. They say that since the vaccines for teachers and students are not mandatory yet, even though some California school districts are seriously contemplating such a terrible option, and the CDC guidelines are not binding anyway, the Department of Health in California decided to take all-or-nothing approach and will require everyone in school to mask up. They just say it's in a very easy way and it's a simple and effective intervention, they call it, that does not interfere with offering full in-person instruction. But this is really bad because, like I said, the evidence that masking up children is young as two, like they say, it really has serious and bad consequences for their health.
Yeah, very, very negative effects on them. And I know that you've written numerous things on this, and again, we've had you on before, and you're very much lock, stock, and barrel with what we do here on Rush to Reason. We talk about all these different things, and I guess the question I have for you, Veronica, is, and it's one of these questions that I myself, other than control, that's the only answer I can ever come up with, because I really can't determine the why of why, I'm going to ask you some other questions across the country that we're doing, but why in California would they want to do this? Because it just, to your point, it makes no medical and or common sense whatsoever. So why?
Well, it does not, but as you know, it doesn't only happen to California schools. They actually reimposing the indoor mask mandates. It started, this mandate came into force this past Saturday. They say that since this highly contagious variant, Delta variant is spreading, they say, and, Los Angeles County actually reimposed this mandate, but it's the most populous county in America. It has 10 million residents living there, and only half of them are vaccinated, while other half remains unprotected against the virus, so they decided just to mask up everyone. But I think if their goal is to promote the vaccine, it's the most unproductive way to do so, because if you impose the mask mandate and say, hey, it's just an additional layer of protection to you, like, okay, so the vaccines are not that effective as
right.
you believe.
That's right.
The news just came out that many LA bars will require the proof of vaccination. So if you want to have a drink, you need to get a proof.
By the way, I think that's really dumb for those businesses to do that, because there'll be a lot of folks that'll just go someplace else. And by the way, I'm looking at California stats. For all of you listening, by the way, I'm looking at California stats. Everything Veronica said, by the way, is true. The only thing that I want to add is a layer to that, Veronica, which, again, doesn't make sense, is we have a average death rate in California, which is highly populated. We're averaging a 7-day average of 23, but yet on the 20th, we only had 5 deaths in all of California. None of what they're doing makes any sense, given the death rate being so low.
And, you know, there is this widespread medical malpractice to count deaths with COVID as deaths because of the COVID. And I've seen a media report that doctors in LA and elsewhere, they say that they have this protocol of how to handle such issues. And they say that if a person dies, say, of cancer or stroke or heart attack, but they were diagnosed with COVID within the last 90 days, this death is counted as COVID death.
Wow.
It is very botched. The statistics.
It's very botched. You're right. And even if we look at new cases, and granted, they've had an uptick in cases, but let's face it, Veronica, it's a 40 million population state, and they're running an average 7-day, new case average in the last 7 days of about 4,200 is all, out of 40 million people. Again, this is peanuts. It's nothing.
Yeah, I know, but it's not about health.
That's
if
true.
It was about health, they would not impose those mandates at all. And, we have accumulated enough data to say that masks are not effective.
Right.
Well, for example, we say that California is ranked 31st among U.S. states in terms of COVID-19 deaths since the pandemic began. It's 162 people per 100,000 residents.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And at the other end of the restriction spectrum, Florida, where Governor DeSantis has prohibited enforcement of local mask mandates, it's not too far and ranks 26. And at the same time, keep in mind that Florida's senior population is the largest in the country, which is the most at risk of getting COVID. Florida has 20.5% of seniors living there, and California has only 14.
Right.
And then there are such states such as Idaho, which hasn't had a statewide mask mandate at all, and it ranks 40th when it comes to COVID cases and deaths. Masks are not that great.
No, we've talked about that to the point where, honestly, Veronica, I'm probably tired of talking about it, yet we still need to because it's going to continue to come back. I mean, it's not done yet. I mean, as much as I know COVID is for the most part over, they are going to drag this thing on as long as they possibly can. They're going to use every variant that comes along, which, by the way, folks listening, there will be more of, because that's what these things do. So there'll be a Delta variant. There'll be a, let's see, A, B, C, D. There'll be whatever E, because that's how they do it. They do D, and then it'll be E, and then F, and whatever. However many of these we end up with, Veronica, that's what they'll do. I really did think that by now this thing would pretty much be put to bed, but they are dragging this thing out as long as they possibly can. And again, all I can figure is it's a control issue. They want to get as many people vaccinated, which, by the way, is a whole other topic we could get into that I really don't understand. And I really am trying to figure out, and I'm not trying to look at this in a sinister manner, but Veronica, you have to ask yourself this question. Is there sinister things going on behind this as to why they're pushing some of the things they are? Because they do not make medical sense whatsoever. It's not for our safety.
It is really scary to think about it, because just yesterday, for example, the report came out that a lawsuit was filed in Alabama, and the whistleblower just came out, and she works in CDC. She, of course, remains anonymous. She doesn't want her identity to be known, of course. So she said that the federal government grossly underreports the vaccine adverse reactions.
That's right.
And she said they are at least five times higher than the numbers that are officially disclosed.
Yeah.
So meaning that the COVID vaccine deaths may be just as high as at least 45,000 people, but they can be as much as many people as 90,000 actually.
That's right.
Can you imagine that?
That's
and
right.
If you start to think about it, it's really scary and it's really terrifying. And at the same time, they are really desperate to get every needle in arm of every person. And even children, they're up to children right now. You can see that they are not.
I know it.
They were talking only about older people, but now they're all about children. Like, go take your teenager, and as soon as your younger children are eligible, just go ahead and step them with this vaccine. But until that time, please mask up and remain obedient and scared.
You are correct. Veronica, where do folks find out more about you, your writings, all the different things you have going on? I know you do a lot of things freelance, but you also do a lot of stuff for The New American. Where do folks find you?
Yes, you're right. I exclusively write for The New American. I love this magazine. It's great, great people working there. And please go to thenewamerican.com and see what's really going on in America. And if you're a freedom-loving American, you will love it.
Awesome. Veronica, thank you very much for joining us. I do appreciate it. Nice to meet you finally over the phone and the radio. I appreciate it very much, and we'll have you back. I do appreciate it.
Likewise, John. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Take care. Have a great evening. American National Insurance is up next, folks. Paul Leuenberger, my agent. He's actually the agent of mine and Richard's and Walt's and a lot of us, by the way. A lot of you even listening use Paul, but a lot of you don't. And a lot of you are probably spending money or don't have the right insurance in the first place. Ask Paul. He'll help you through all of that. It's a simple phone call. 303-662-0789.
Paul Leuenberger with American National Insurance offers a rebate program unlike any other. Every year that you don't file a claim, you get a certain percentage of your money back. Just one example of how Paul Leuenberger, the personal insurance agent of John Rush, keeps your rates so low. He rewards his customers for their diligence and responsibility. Paul can also help you strategize about when to file a claim and when to pay out of pocket so you save more money in the long run. You don't want to shop online for insurance because you have no idea what you're buying. You need Paul Leuenberger with American National, the no surprises insurance agent. Call 303-662-0789. That's 303-662-0789. And ask Paul Leuenberger with American National Insurance for details about his unique rebate program for home and auto insurance. Talk to somebody with the expertise to advise you so you get the coverage you expect.
Meet your future employer in person at the Job News USA Job Fair, Wednesday, August 4th. You're tired of submitting online applications and never hearing back. At the Job News USA Job Fair in Aurora, you'll find companies with plenty of open positions, both full and part-time, ranging from entry-level to management. Meet face-to-face with potential employers, such as Loomis, Denver Public School, Furniture Row, ABM Aviation, FedEx Ground, Avis Budget Group, TSA, United States Postal Service, and, of course, KLZ 560. Mark your calendar for Wednesday, August 4th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Aurora Summit Event and Conference Center. It's completely free for job seekers, so dress professionally, bring your resume, and be sure to stop by the Crawford Media Group booth. Pre-register now at jobnewsusa.com. That's jobnewsusa.com.
Summer's here and car shows are back. Join John Rush and the Drive Radio crew as they broadcast live from the 20th annual Red Lion Run Car Show on Saturday, July 24th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Leprino Foods parking lot located on the corners of 38th Avenue and Quivis Street in Denver. All proceeds go to Food for Thought Denver. The Red Lion Run Car Show is brought to you by Group Insurance Analysts and the Italians of America. For more info, go to drive-radio.com.
This is Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
All right, Scott Garlis will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. Before that, there's an interesting clip. I'm going to break this down as we go through it because this is titled, this is a tweet that went out. AOC retweeted her interview with Don Lemon. So it was one communist talking to another, by the way. And she breaks down, this is what it's titled, the GOP's inflation talking points. So I'm going to go through this and break it down for all of you. And my thoughts on, you pretty much know my thoughts on inflation anyways, but I'm going to go ahead and play this and I'll stop and start it as need be. Here we go.
You know, today, I'm sure you saw, you know, what happened with the stock market. They said it was because of COVID, but there was lots of talk about inflation. So I want to talk about the fears of inflation. President Biden pushed back, assuring Americans that the price increases that they've seen hitting their wallets are temporary.
Now, okay, I'm going to stop for a second before she even starts talking. No, folks, they're not temporary. There are things that you are going to see a continual price increase of, and it's not going to come back down. Unless things are done, and I'll talk about some of those things throughout, you know, this next 10 minutes or so. For example, oil. If we continue to rely on imports, which we are, we don't open up more drilling here, we don't expand what we have going on here, we don't put pipelines back in play, which, again, for those of you out there listening, by the way, and there's a lot of you, and I love each and every one of you, but please, the Keystone Pipeline has nothing to do with our current oil prices. Nothing. Zero zilch. When something's not built and it's not completed and there's no oil running through it, discontinuing it has no effect on what's happening with oil prices. You may want to debate me on that. Feel free to do so. You'll have a really hard time proving me wrong. Because when there's no oil flowing through a pipeline, it's not affecting it. Now, was it a bad thing to cancel it? Absolutely. Not only for the worker side of the fence, but the transportation of down the road, how we're currently transporting oil, the fact the Keystone Pipeline would have made all of that cheaper. Yes, that this is a building out of infrastructure to the future. That's what the pipeline was doing. But again, folks, please stop putting out on Facebook that the Keystone Pipeline is the reason, or the canceling of, is the reason why we have gas prices where they're at today. It's not. There's lots of other factors the Biden administration and Governor Polis's of the world have done to make oil and gas prices go up, but it was not the Keystone Pipeline. So again, if we want to lower prices overall when it comes to what people need daily, the price of food and so on, we need more oil on our own, not imported from Saudi Arabia and other countries.
Last week, you questioned the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell and expressed concern over prematurely raising rates. And what that could mean for marginalized communities. What are your biggest concerns over inflation?
Okay, real quick, by the way. Marginalized communities aren't borrowing money typically, and if they are, they're paying a higher interest rate than what the Feds are doing anyways. It's irregardless of what the Feds do with interest rates, by the way. Marginalized communities, if they go buy a car, they're paying 19, 20, 21% already. Okay, so it goes up a point or two. That's, again, this is not affecting them directly. So, again, I'll talk more about this even with Scott, but this isn't having any effect there.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the deal with inflation, is that if we do not get the root cause of these price increases right, then policy decisions could be made that could really negatively impact your life, boost unemployment, and again, increase in interest rate.
Okay, real quick, boost unemployment. We have 9.5 million jobs across the country right now that aren't filled. We don't have an unemployment problem. We have an employment problem in this country, AOC. So get your facts straight.
And we do not want that. So it's really important that we get the diagnosis right into what's going into these price increases. When you look at what actual prices are going up, it's in very specific sectors. If this,
and by the way, no, it's not. It's in every sector because of what I just said a moment ago. When you take the raw goods, oil, for example, which affects food and corn and on down the line we go, it affects every single thing all of us buy on a daily basis, especially those that are more disenfranchised, quote unquote, than those of us that are not.
Overall inflationary issue, we would see prices going up in relatively equal amounts across the board, no matter what the good is.
And we are. Again, this is a person out of touch that probably doesn't even pump a gallon of gas herself because she doesn't understand that everything has increased across the board. I know of nothing that's cheaper today than it was a year ago. Everything is increasing in price.
But we know what's getting expensive. Things like the cost of lumber, items like cars, whether they are new or used, and other sorts of items that rely on shipping and shipping containers coming in from overseas.
Okay, she's got a point there. And we are paying higher prices in those areas. And I've explained the lumber and the car side real quick on the shipping container side of the fence. And she's going to answer that in a moment, which she's completely wrong on, by the way. The way to fix that problem is quit relying on imports. Start doing things more in the United States of America to where you're not relying on a shipping container coming in the first place. That's how we handle things. Incentivize the trades. Get more people in them. Get more people out in that world so that we've got a plethora of individuals working there and not a lack of, which is where we're at right now. Incentivize is my point in lots of areas, from the trades to manufacturing here in the United States of America. And stop relying on those containers coming in the first place.
These are very sector specific, which means that these are due to supply chain issues. That means that we don't have enough ports that can.
Again, wrong. No, it's not. It's the fact that we've got a lot of ports where it's very unionized and there's a lot of rules and regulations when it comes to how a ship can even be brought into port and where those ships can even be made. And we've got a lot of things there that are totally, totally screwed up. It's not because we don't have enough of them. It's because of the way a lot of them are managed, by the way, by the government.
Accommodate all of the backed up ships that are trying to come in. It's because we don't have enough computer chips that are produced by just a handful of factories in the world that go into these vehicles, which are then causing a rush on used vehicles. And it's because of all of the, you know, all of the rush on demand to build and to remodel homes during lockdown. And the reason it's important for us to understand that is because the solution to that is, guess what? Infrastructure. Yeah. We need to put in more money and more funding.
So her answer is, let's print more money, let's spend more money, let's spend it on quote-unquote infrastructure, which, by the way, I'm not sure what infrastructure she's referring to that would lower the price of goods when it's all said and done, because if we print more money, AOC, that automatically creates inflation. Let's go back to Economics 101. Money that comes from thin air has to come from someplace. You borrow it. That creates inflation inside of an economy. That's what we just got done talking about a moment ago. You know, the reality is, folks, this is a person clueless when it comes to how the economy works.
Expand ports so that we can add resilience to our supply chain. That's what we can do if we get it right. We actually support these infrastructure investments and make sure that we protect not just the size, but potentially make it bigger. Right. Now, if we get it wrong, if we say this is inflation, that this is an inflationary trend, et cetera, what's going to happen if we get it wrong? We put policy pressure and political pressure on the Fed to increase interest rates, which will drive up the rate.
And by the way, and I'll ask Scott this in a moment, I always thought and was under the understanding that the Fed operates independently of any kind of political pressure or any type of a political party that's out there. And I thought that was always supposed to be one complete separate entity from one another. And there wasn't supposed to be any pressure one way or the other. So guess what she's really saying is the left does put pressure on the Fed on an ongoing basis. She just said it herself.
Of unemployment, which is the exact opposite thing that you want to be doing in such a fragile state of our economic recovery post-COVID. Okay. So that's why it's so important that we get this right and put the politics aside.
Okay, and by the way, we're not in a fragile state economically speaking. We're doing very well, and we'll talk to Scott about that here in just one moment. So stay tuned. Scott Garlis will join us here in just one moment. Extreme Auto Repair is coming up next, folks. And the only thing she did get right is the fact that with a lack of new cars, it does increase the pressure on the used car. Prices are up. I told you all several weeks ago that despite what a lot of folks were saying on social media that the used car market was going to crash, it hasn't. So again, I was right. These morons were wrong. And you're not going to see any less pressure on used cars for probably a year. So what's that mean? Keep your car running and running as efficiently as possible. And if it means investing a little bit of money into it, do so. Extreme Auto Repair can help you with all of that. Sell you Cooper tires at cost. Keep your car on the road today. Make it last the longest possible and save money at the same time. Get your free wiper blades by going to klzradio.com or call Extreme Direct 303-841-1071.
Thanks for restoring my faith in humanity. No more hopping from one mechanic to another trying to find a solution for your vehicle's persistent issue. Extreme Auto Repair has a reputation for fixing problems quickly. You bring your Nissan to the dealer because of a rattling noise. They charge you $4,000. You still hear the noise. You bring the same vehicle to Extreme Auto Repair in Parker, where Sean and his team quickly discover a broken bolt in the subframe. a known Nissan failure they have seen many times before. Real stories like this one earn Extreme Auto Repair customers for life. As one woman exclaims in a recent 5-star review, "Thanks for restoring my faith in humanity." The factory-trained technicians at Extreme Auto Repair stay up to date with the manufacturer data for your vehicle's specific make and model for quick, experienced problem solving. KLZradio.com/extreme.
All right, Kevin Flesh is next. And again, I say this week a lot because of what I did last week when it came to jury duty, but really was a fresh reminder to me how important a good attorney is on your side because, man, having somebody sharp on your side of the fence will make a difference wholly in the outcome of that case. Kevin is that guy. He's trial tested, trial ready. It's Kevin Flesh, F-L-E-S-C-H. Call him today, 303-806-8886.
At Flesh & Beck Law, your attorney sets you at ease from the first meeting so you have the space to think clearly. After an injury, you immediately start worrying about how you will afford the healing process. You start thinking about insurance deductibles, physical therapy appointments, vehicle repairs, and how to pay for rent in the meantime. Listening to one calm, qualified voice throughout the process will help you think rationally instead of making decisions based on anxiety. Call Flesh & Beck Law for a free, no-obligation consultation, and you will talk to a lawyer right away, not some legal assistant who just wants to find out how much money your case might be worth. Then, once you and your attorney both decide to move forward with your case, you will continue working with that attorney the whole time. The same person who meets you for a consultation will also sit beside you in court. Eliminate the fear of the unknown. Call Flesh & Beck Law at 303-806-8886.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter at Rush to Reason and on Facebook.com/Rush to Reason.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Charlie's getting Scott rounded up for us, which I'm going to talk to him about a few of those things that, you know, AOC said a moment ago, or I played a moment ago, I should say. She said those things earlier in the week, you know, her and Don Lemon. And anytime AOC's mouth is moving, you have to wonder, A, is she going to say something really, really dumb because she's, you know, off target and she doesn't have her cue cards and so on? Or, in this particular case, who's feeding her the cue cards so she actually says something that sounds halfway intelligent? Because we all know she cannot speak intelligently unless somebody's feeding her the cue cards. And I'm not trying to be mean about that. That is the God's honest truth, folks. She is one of the dumbest people on the planet, and I mean that sincerely. Scott Garlish joining us now from Stansberry Research. Scott, welcome. How are you, man?
John, I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I was just commenting a moment ago when I played the little AOC slash Don Lemon clip where AOC was trying to explain to everybody inflation and how it works and what we need to do right, wrong, and otherwise. And I got a couple of questions for you on that line. And, you know, one of the things that she said we really need to do to get things back on track is, you know, A, diagnose all of our problems. Do we really have inflation? You know, are there really just, you know, spot areas of inflation, or is it across the board? And I gave my answers on that, and I think you already know what my feelings are. But the thing she said we really need is, you know, a lot more infrastructure, more stimulus, more money injected into the economy. And Scott, last time I checked, I thought that injecting money that we have to go borrow raises inflation.
Yes, it does.
That's what I thought. I thought that was just kind of simple economics 101. If a country doesn't have the money and they have to go borrow it and they have to sell things to make that happen, that in and of itself creates inflation, right?
If you are going to increase the money supply and you're going to make dollars more readily available, you know, if they're easier to get, they're going to be worth less.
Yeah. It's called supply and demand, right?
Yeah. And then as they become worth less, it costs more of them to buy the same amount of goods today as it did yesterday, and that drives prices up. So, yeah, that's pretty basic supply and demand. That's inflation.
One of the things that she didn't talk about that I added in when I was talking about how I believe inflation is across the board and it's part of our core now is, you know, you look at things like oil and the price of oil and the barrel of oil and gasoline at the pump. And it's interesting today, I didn't mention this throughout the show yet, but I was actually filling up all of my 5-gallon cans that I use around my house and barn and so on. And, you know, I keep, I don't know, 20, 25 gallons in cans kicking around for different things. And I went to pump the last can today, Scott, and ran out. Not very often that you're at the pump that you actually run out of fuel that you're pumping into something. Granted, I didn't need it. It wasn't a huge emergency, so I didn't go anyplace else and try to find another station to fill up. But if you're really low on fuel and you were trying to get things pumped into your car, that'd be kind of a dismal thing. But bottom line is, we could do some things across the country to lower the overall price of oil and fuel. But instead, Scott, we're just going to make bargain with OPEC and try to get it that way instead.
That's correct. I mean, we've talked about this, and that's one of the things that, like, why investing in oil-related stocks, you know, is been a very good thing, because, you know, the administration is putting in place policies that are reducing future oil supply in this country.
And that's right.
The more you do that, the less available it's going to be to turn to things like gasoline or, you know, one of the other inflation components. You look at some of the companies that have talked earlier, like some of the chemical processors, PPG Industries. They make a lot of paint and industrial coatings.
Right.
Well, you've got to use oil to make those things.
Yeah, the oil stock is where it starts. That's correct.
Yeah, and you have to use oil to make plastics. So if you cut back on the available supply, those things are going to go up in price. It's just, you know, think about how much we use things like paint, plastic in our daily lives. I mean, it adds up, and you know, I know what they're doing. They're trying to push, well, you know, the gas pump, you got to go into electric vehicles, blah blah blah. But it's, you know, one of the unfortunate things sometimes with government is people get on these crusades, but they don't think about all the ancillary effects ancillary industries.
You're right. By the way, very well said. We saw earlier in the week, Monday, actually, that the quote-unquote Delta variant makes headlines. The stock market plunges 700 points. I think they came back, you know, the next couple of days and corrected for that, because I think they realized that, wait a minute, time out. In fact, I was reading Wall Street Journal today that, wait a minute, time out. This thing's not really as bad as everybody's claiming. If you look at the actual numbers, it's not that bad. Was Monday really from that, or was it other corrective things going on in the market?
No, it was very much so from that. So a couple weeks ago, we talked about this, about how people get sucked into the headlines, and sometimes what happens is, you know, the news media, they want you to click, they want you to pay attention. In the summer, especially, is when sort of the news cycle can get kind of dull sometimes, right? It's just, they run out of things to talk about. So one of the things that over this past weekend, it was like the weekend reading idea, was like every story was Delta variant. And what they don't talk about, when they're not talking about the hard numbers, they're not saying like, hey, the cases have spiked to 35,000. They're like, it's jumped 300%. I sometimes feel like they do that because they want to avoid talking the hard number with you. Now, the cases have definitely gone up. But what people are worried about is, what does that mean for the growth outlook? Or when I say people, I should say, that's what some of the Wall Street investors are worried about. But, you know, I think when you stop and you sort of cut the noise out and you really look at the situation, whether or not you may or may not agree with this politically, there are ways to solve this problem. You can take a vaccine and it protects you from this. It doesn't mean you won't get sick, but it should prevent severe illness and death. I know, like in Maryland, they used to have some statistics that, you know, all the recent deaths are people that were unvaccinated. They're not having deaths with vaccinated people. Now, I'm sure there's probably been a case or something since I've read that, and there are probably people that can show otherwise, but in general, it's a very low percentage of that happening. So,
well, I think you could also say at this point, and at least I would, Scott, that if you look at COVID in general, why we're still dragging this thing out is beyond me. It's done. It's over. I look at the cases nationwide daily. I look at the deaths nationwide daily. There's a few little hiccups here and there that they would call a spike in cases, not in deaths, by the way. And I mean, the spikes are minuscule anyway. So really, Scott, at the end of the day, COVID's here. It's not going anywhere. We got to learn to deal with it and quit focusing on it daily and having it affect the markets. In my opinion, this is a done deal. Let's move on.
Yeah, you're spot on that it's something. It's here. We are going to have to deal with it going forward.
It's like the flu. Like, I mean, we deal with the flu. We deal with heart disease.
Correct.
We deal with diabetes. We deal with strokes. We deal with Alzheimer's. We deal with, you know, autism. I mean, I can go down the list, Scott, of all the different things across the board we deal with. Just add this to that list and let's move on and quit talking about it. But for some odd reason, the powers that be will not let this thing go.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I can think of that there is sort of an interest in keeping it going is, you know,
money.
It's spending.
Money.
That's exactly it. If you're trying to sell people on, hey, you know, we want more, you know, we want to raise more money to spend and we want people to be on board with this.
Yep.
So we're going to push this.
There you go.
That is it. But, you know, it is interesting, too. You are starting to hear a lot more White House officials talk about how well the economy is doing. You know, not too long ago, they were talking about how badly the economy is doing. So there's an interesting turn there. But yes, we have gotten, as a society, we've gotten to this point. We have learned how to adapt and how to deal with this. And I think at the end of the day, I think this is why you're seeing the market bounce back the way it is because investors realize, you know what, there are options available that we can move forward and we don't have to worry about this. And, you know, it's people's willingness to either wear a mask if they don't want to get vaccinated or get vaccinated. And that's to me, that's it.
I was I said this earlier in the day. I actually have, because of media and so on, I've got access to a lot of the things automotive-wise that, you know, that come out and some of the communication pieces and so on. And Stellantis did a big communication piece yesterday to all the fleet customers. I'm one of those as well, so I was able to, you know, listen in. And the reality, Scott, is, and I'm sure this is every major car manufacturer, if Stellantis is saying this, they're all, you know, BMW, Mercedes, Toyota, GM, Ford, I can go down the list, they're all going to say the same thing. These guys are talking about how this chip shortage, while they're doing their best to deal with it, and they're going to try their best to make sure they can deliver fleet vehicles and get things handled that way, really, at the end of the day, they're not expecting any relief on this until quarter one or quarter two of 2022, which means new cars are going to be, you know, hard to find. It's going to be scarce, just like it is right now. And the used car prices are still going to stay high for the next year, roughly.
I totally believe that. You know, and one of the reasons why is, you know, one of the plans is to build more semiconductor manufacturing capacity in the United States. Well, that's a multi-year process. Just building the facility
doesn't happen overnight. Yeah, we are not going to dig out of this chip shortage by building a plant in the U.S. anytime soon. To your point, I mean, even if all of the regulatory things went away in any city, county level, or what have you, and the feds just came in and said, "We're going to build it. This is a military project. You have no say in what's happening." We're still a couple of years away from having a completed factory. And by the way, what I just said would never happen, anyways.
Two to 3 years minimum. Yes. Yeah. No, probably wouldn't. Somebody has to go buy up all the land for
that. That's right. So, you know, the reality is this is a long process, Scott, to your point.
Yeah. No, it's you're looking at 2 to 3 years after you've gotten the lands, the permits, all the okays, and then you're talking at least 2 to 3 years.
Quick, Scott, by the way, not opposed to doing that, because I think it's something we should be looking at infrastructure-wise as a country and getting some of those things handled and having them back here. I think it really is something we should look at, and hopefully we are. You know more about that than I do, but I really hope there's companies out there looking at that, because I do think there's a future there.
Yeah, no, there is, and I think we've talked about this in the past, too, is like you look at China's ambitions with Taiwan. Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing is the world's largest semiconductor manufacturer. They make 60% of global supply on that one island. And I mean, God bless them. But the problem is, you know, if China, they seem pretty ambitious about wanting to take Taiwan over.
That's right.
If China takes Taiwan over, that puts the world's supply at risk. I think there's something called contract manufacturing as well, which is what that is somebody has a chip design, say like NVIDIA, but Taiwan Semiconductor makes the chip for them.
Right.
Taiwan Semiconductor dominates like 80%. It's between Taiwan Semiconductor and UMC, is the other big company there. It's like 80% of the global contract manufacturing market on top of that. I mean, so it's a big deal. And not only is it the semiconductor supply, but think about the access to all of the, you know, the trade secrets mm-hmm. that China will get
that's
in terms
right.
of technology.
That's right.
And that's one
huge.
Of the big things. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I really feel like, Scott, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, I look at several things that we need to keep in this country, and I'm not a big subsidy guy. You know me, I'm free market. I don't believe in the government, you know, getting their hands in the pot. But I also believe there's some things national security-wise that we should be able to keep going in this country. And one of those is the ability to build cars. The second is to be able to build airplanes. The third is to build rocket ships and things like we just saw Bezos go do. And last but not least, I really feel like this chip end of things is a national security issue that we should be doing here in our country some way, for, you know, some way, shape, form, or other. We need to be doing it here.
Yeah, it's correct. And the other big thing there that I think people don't think about so much either is that what does that do for these spending patterns? If you bring a lot of these jobs and put them back here in this country,
good point.
You know, you bring all your supply chain back here. You don't have to worry about spending when the cycle goes up or down because, you know, some of the supply, say you produce a lot of the PPE equipment
right.
in this country.
Right.
You know, and then when we saw that big boom during COVID, you know, the supply chain companies here that did that, they would have felt all those benefits and they would have spent more, they would have hired more. So, you know, maybe one industry loses people, but another gains and it
right.
all sets. And then that pulls you out of some of that crazy spending cycle and you don't have to worry about things like the dollar getting depressed and inflation. And it
actually makes us very strong if we're able to do that. It would actually fix some of the problems we have in that area.
It would fix a lot of the problems we have in that area.
Yeah. So, again, these are things that, as I was, you know, listening to AOC talk to Don Lemon and explain why, you know, what inflation really is and what we need to do about it, I didn't hear anything about what we just said a moment ago between you and I. When do we get the powers that be to start talking like you and I do?
So I think that the China conversation is moving very much in that direction.
Okay.
I think you're seeing it out of the White House. There, you know, actually, I was reading some stuff today about the relationship with China is actually getting worse with the Biden administration.
Mm.
They're going even more hardline than what Trump did. So that's going to be an interesting development. You know, I think that's the start of it, because what these countries, companies are going to do is, yeah, some of them have moved to Vietnam, some of them have moved to other places in East Asia, but at the end of the day, they're still going to realize, hey, you know, one, infrastructure-wise in East Asia, they have to reestablish road networks, you know, cable networks, electrical networks, all these things, just because unfortunately, that's still an emerging market, developing world economies, right? And you still have the risk of, you know, what if China wants to keep expanding? And Vietnam's an easy target. I mean, heck, even South Korea's is ultimately an easy target because it's North Korea's next-door neighbor.
Right.
And it's just, I think you need to ask yourself as a company, do I want to be back in America where maybe things cost a little bit more, but all these other benefits that I'm going to get,
right.
it's worth it. It's sort of like if you go to repair your roof and you just go with the cheapest guy because he's the cheapest guy, you don't always get the best job. And I find many times that you wind up going back and spending more following
That's
up
right.
and getting that work fixed.
That's right.
Then you do just going with the good guy up front.
Well, and with automation, that's one thing I want to ask you too. When it comes to, you know, automation and some of the things that are happening there, Scott, to where a lot of this semiconductor stuff would be done with, you know, some highly skilled workers and a lot of robotics. I mean, really, at the end of the day, they could do that here as cheaply as they could other places. I realize the land costs and so on would be more on the front side. But again, you work that into the price of your chip at the end. And if you can still make it and have it in front of you, wouldn't everybody right now pay a little more if they could actually get a hold of one?
Completely. And again, the economic benefits of that would show up in so many other places because those companies would be making more money, their employees would be getting paid more, maybe they'd be hiring some more people. Even if they're more automated, they might be ramping up capacity that much more. And it starts to flow out all over the place. And it would get a more consistent, even cycle instead of this chop way up, chop way down.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't be as much. to me, in my mind, it wouldn't be as much of a feast or famine type cycle.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of what we keep talking about, too, and by the way, folks listening, I think Scott and I have been fairly accurate in a lot of things that we've talked about literally in the past 6+ months. You know, one of those being the housing market, there's no bubble. The used car market, there's no bubble. I mean, there's a lot of factors that are going into these, Scott, that you can just look at and say, time out. You know, it's just a supply and demand issue. There's an article right now in the Wall Street Journal talking about how, you know, starter homes are still at a shortage in almost every major city and beyond. And there's an article in the Wall Street Journal talking about the very same thing you and I have talked about. It's a supply and demand issue. You're not going to have a housing bubble and have anything burst when you don't have enough of them.
No, and I can't remember if we discussed this the other week, but companies like BlackRock are getting in, and they're Blackstone are buying up a lot of houses, and they're viewing them as income properties, rental properties. And I look at that very positively, simply from a housing crash standpoint.
Right.
Because it always seems like when the cycle blows up, it's because there's a housing market crash, right? And values plummet, and all of a sudden people want to flip out, and they're net worth goes down, you get margin calls elsewhere, all these crazy things happen. But because of that, you know, those guys have billions and trillions of dollars. They're not going to dump those houses the first time prices dip.
Right.
They're going to be there. They're actually probably going to buy more. So that just tells me there's an underlying stability to the housing market that wasn't there last time around.
Right. I can't add anything to that. I think you're spot on. We'll talk more about that in the weeks ahead. But I agree with you on that, Scott. I don't see those things changing. There's no housing bubble. You know, now there may be some micro ones of those across the country, but there's you know, in our area particularly, there's none here in Colorado. And as I said earlier, you know, I was watching things on the internet, two or three weeks ago, talking about how the, you know, used car market was going to crash any day now. Well, we're like 3 weeks or 4 weeks past that now. And I just told everybody a moment ago why it's not crashing, and it's not going to, Scott.
Yeah, that's correct. It's going to stay pretty strong.
Yep.
It's not a good time to be in the market to buy a car.
No, it is not. I mean, as I try to tell everybody, if you own a car, keep it running now and keep it running as long as you can, because trying to buy new and or use is going to be really difficult. So, Scott, as always, I appreciate it, sir. We'll talk to you again on our normal day next week, Thursday. So thanks for making the change this week.
John, thanks for your time.
All right, give everybody your info. Where can they find you, sir?
Oh, sorry. StansberryInvestor.com. Come check out our free stuff. Check out our paid stuff. And we're there to help the little guy.
Awesome. Scott, as always, I appreciate it, sir.
Have a great night.
You bet. Take care. Have a good evening as well. Affordable Interest Mortgage is next. We're going to talk to Kurt tomorrow, by the way, and a lot of what we just talked to Scott about, and find out exactly what's going on with rates and housing and supply and all of that. We'll talk to him tomorrow. In the meantime, anything you need from Kurt, 720-895-0500.
Take aim. Affordable Interest Mortgage has been offering the asset manager all-in-one loan for over 11 years. We are experienced in helping homeowners pay thousands less in interest on their mortgage, own their home faster, all without spending one dime more. 720-895-0500. Take aim. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where we have hundreds of clients that have been using this loans to build their equity faster, access emergency funds when necessary, and pay off their home in 8 to 13 years versus 25 to 30. People initially believe this loan is too good to be true, but it is true. Call 720-895-0500 now to see if you qualify. Loans from $100,000 to $2.5 million, same rate. Ask our previous clients. They will tell you it works. Call 720-895-0500 and work with the experts. This loan has been around since 1965. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you. 720-895-0500. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
Folks, you hear me talk about Franktown a lot. It's easy. Find them at klzradio.com, 720-770-7777.
Teach your children responsibility around guns in a safe, welcoming environment. At Franktown Firearms, everyone shares a common goal: to keep on learning. Responsibility requires practice, so head instructor Karen Murray considers herself a lifelong student as well as a teacher. Karen creates her own proprietary training courses so people of all ages may develop confidence with firearms. Now, for the first time, only at Franktown Firearms, children as young as 5 years old may learn to keep themselves and others safe in homes with guns. starting with airsoft and BBs. You and your children will develop a healthy respect for firearms together. Sign up for one of Karen's classes as a family at klzradio.com/franktown. First responders, military veterans, and range members receive discounts in the shop. Franktown Firearms, where friends are made.
You know you ought to take a second look at your home and auto insurance because premiums keep going up, but you haven't set aside the time. Let Paul Lenigro and his team at Group Insurance Analysts help you for free. Make one free phone call today to review your plan. 303-423-0162.
It's time to leave your safe space. This is Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. As I said earlier, Steve House will join us tomorrow in the first hour, and we're really going to pour through a lot of this facts that have come out on COVID and vaccines and kids and different things that you're not going to hear anywhere else, especially mainstream media or even social media, because they're squashing it. So we'll talk to him tomorrow about that. Liz Merrill will join us as well. And then don't forget Kurt Rogers from Affordable Interest Mortgage in the last hour. We'll talk mortgages and all the different things going on there in regards to the markets and where they headed and all of that as well. So join us tomorrow. Don't forget National Crawford Roundtable is next. This is Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560.